Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway.
Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares started trading in the green today after global markets ended mixed overnight. In early trade, the Straits Times Index was up 0.3% to 3,224 points after some 34 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Closing numbers, as usual, they're still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen right now. The Straits Times Index up 0.72% at 3,239 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 969 million Sing dollars. The gainers outnumbered losers, 382 versus 210. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, Singtel, UOB, OCBC and Genting Singapore. Heavily traded securities included Oceanus, Seatrium and Chasen. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have Seatrium and Global Invercom, because both companies today filed notices that they each registered three consecutive years of losses based on audited full-year consolidated accounts. Now, elsewhere, from competition for IPOs within major stock exchanges around the world to a look ahead to US inflation numbers, we've got more international headlines in focus. Also on deck, how Donald Trump's media and technology firm, the Trump Media and Technology Group, fell as much as 12% yesterday. Now, let's break down the developments with Chong Se-jin, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. Se-jin, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on board. And Se-jin, let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual. How has the SDI fared so far today? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, the SDI is up by around 0.7% today. And I see that most of the index constituents are actually ending the day in the green with gains of less than 2%. I think the biggest mover I can see is Jardine Cycle & Carriage, which locked a gain of around 5% to $26. The most prominent news involving the company is the brokerage firm City Research initiating coverage on the company with a buy call and a target price of 29. So I think it's common to see stocks move higher if they receive positive recommendations from brokerage firms. So the Jardine and Cycle Carriages gain, while noteworthy, is not surprising given this context.
Right. And zooming in on the companies to watch, Se-jin, we do have Seatrium and Global Invercom. Both companies today filed notices. They each registered three consecutive years of losses based on full-year audited consolidated accounts. How concerning are both developments to investors, and how far have they been priced in looking at the share price movements today?
Yeah, sure. So we can start with Seatrium, which in its current form is actually the combination of Sembcorp Marine and Keppel Offshore & Marine. This is actually not the first time that Seatrium has filed a notice for three consecutive years of losses. The company has in fact been making annual losses since 2018. So back then, the company, which was only Sembcorp Marine, was heavily dependent on the oil and gas industry for its revenues. Today, the company is still dependent on the oil and gas industry for the lion's share of its revenue. So 2018, 2019, 2020, and even 2021 were all pretty tough years for the oil and gas industry. There was relatively low oil prices and at least two price crashes that I can notice. So it's no shock to me that Seatrium's business had not done well. Mm-hmm. But the company's poor results in 2022 and 2023 were surprising to me given the recovery in oil prices that had happened. I guess the relatively good news for Seatrium's investors is that management seems determined to turn things around. During the company's latest Investor Day event in March this year, management shared their target for 2028 to generate EBITDA of over $1 billion, which is up more than four times from 2023's level, and a return on equity of 8%, up from a negative number in 2023. So management also wants to significantly reduce the company's reliance on the oil and gas industry, with a goal of lowering the company's share of revenue from the industry from an overwhelming majority today to around 40% in 2028, and have renewable energy be the other big block of revenue. So it remains to be seen, I think, if Seatrium's management can execute on their plan, but at least the plan seems sound.
Yeah.
Now, coming to Global Invercom, which is in the satellite communications business, it is the first time the company has reported three consecutive years of losses. But it's actually not that surprising to take a step back, because the company has periodically been reporting losses throughout its history as a listed company. So for some perspective, its average net income margin from 2016 to 2021 was a negative 0.7%. There are some, I guess, encouraging green shoots because the company's net loss have narrowed significantly from US$15.5 million in 2022 to just $1 million in 2023. Part of the question is whether or not the consecutive losses have been priced in.
Yeah.
What I can say is that I don't think it's a surprise for stock market participants by any means because the two companies had already released their results for 2023 a few weeks ago. So those losses would already be well known by then, by now.
From Seatrium and Global Infocom surging, let's take a look at Quad Live. It announced yesterday that one of its cryogenic storage tanks, as well as a dry shipper, which collectively contain about 5,300 cord blood units, they're at high risk of being adversely affected by temperature excursions. Now, the group intends to offer a refund and waiver of annual fees to the affected clients. Your thoughts, again, how far has that been expected by market participants already, given what's happened over the past few months?
Yep. So with Cod Life, the announcement that you referenced is linked to an announcement the company had made back in late November 2023, so that's about 4 months ago, that some of its cord blood units had issues with the storage temperatures.
Yeah.
The direct impact of the refunds and waivers that Cod Life wants to pay to its affected customers is actually pretty significant, as management has estimated that they will lower the company's revenue and profit before tax by around $9.2 million for 2024. Now, for perspective, Cod Life's revenue in 2023 was $56 million, and its profit before tax was around $4.5 million Singapore dollars. But I think the even more important thing here is the potential loss of reputation for the company. An individual's cord blood is a precious resource. It cannot be replaced. So parents who are considering the storage of their baby's cord blood, which I believe can be stopped only immediately after a baby's birth, they may be thinking twice, maybe even thrice, on whether they want to use Cod Life if they are not currently customers or whether they want to continue using Cod Life if they are currently customers. So I think this potential loss of reputation is hard to handicap because in the worst case scenario for Cod Life, it could mean the loss of a huge group of customers, which could be devastating for the company. Now, the good thing here is that Cod Life does have a pretty strong balance sheet with a net cash position of around $61 million. If there's long-term reputational damage, there's only so much that a strong balance sheet can do.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Chong Se Jing, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. And Se Jing, let's talk about the appetite for IPOs right now. The market for IPOs seems to be showing signs of making a comeback this year, but experts said competition among Singapore, the US, Hong Kong and London to capture new listings, that will also heat up. What do you think is key for businesses when considering where to list? How far is Singapore on top of businesses' needs then?
I think there are likely a few things that companies tend to consider when it comes to their listing location. So first, there's the breadth of the country's stock market. The second thing is the level of familiarity that a country's investors have with a company's business model. And I think the third thing is, which is somewhat related to the second point, it's the potential valuation multiple that a company's shares could fetch. So given these factors, I think Singapore is unfortunately quite low in the list of potential listing locations for companies that are seeking to IPO, with a few exceptions. So for example, if there's a large real estate investment trust or REIT that wants to list, Singapore might be attractive given our investing community's familiarity and positive affection for REITs. But if there's a company that's, say, a software-as-a-service startup that is currently loss-making, or if it's a young biotech startup with zero revenue, but it has a promising gene therapy that's currently in phase two clinical trials, I don't think Singapore will be in the list of considerations for listing. It's the Singapore market is just not familiar with such companies. And so the chances of these companies fetching an appropriate valuation multiple for their business prospects is would be relatively lower.
Further away surging, we've got a slew of U.S. inflation numbers for March up tomorrow night, I believe. What are you expecting when it comes to the core and headline inflation numbers, looking at the stickiness of the non-farm payrolls figures out just last Friday? And how far will that really complicate matters for the Fed when it comes to interest rates? I mean, some people are saying no rate cuts all the way until 2025. Your thoughts?
Yeah, sure. So for some context, the only investing activity I'm involved with professionally is in the stock market. And I've actually never paid any attention to inflation numbers or the level of interest rates for my investing.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually think that these numbers are not that important for long-term investors, which is the form of investing that I can speak to. So for example, if you look at interest rates, it turns out that when interest rates were high in the past, U.S. stocks have also done well as well as done poorly. And when interest rates were low, U.S. stocks have also done well as well as done poorly. So if you use actual numbers, right, from research from Ben Carlson, in the 1980s, the three-month treasury bill had a high average yield of 8.8%, but U.S. stocks actually returned 17% annually. And in the 1970s, when the treasury bill yield was 6%, which is also high, U.S. stocks returned just 6% annually. Then in the 1950s, when the treasury bill's average yield was 2%, which is a low yield, U.S. stocks' annualized gain was actually nearly 20%. And then finally, you know, if you go to the 2000s, when the treasury bill's average yield was again low at around 3%, the annualized return for U.S. stocks was a negative 1%. So the relationship between interest rates and stocks are actually kind of all over the place. So I don't think it's actually that important for long-term investors in the stock market to notice.
Right. That being said, in the near term, which are the sectors that are most sensitive to interest rates? And when it comes to your portfolio, which are the sectors that you will perhaps put in less weightage versus more weightage at this point?
So I think in general, the groups of companies that will be the most sensitive to interest rates will be financial companies, actually, I think. Because from my perspective, what I'm looking out for would be how interest rates would affect a company's business. So at least for financial, the level of revenues that they can earn would actually be directly affected by the broader interest rate environment. And I will also be looking at companies with heavily leveraged balance sheets, because if interest rates do rise, it's generally a bad thing for them.
Is there any one company that's on your list? If I can try my luck over here.
You mean a list of companies in terms of?
In terms of the companies that will be most sensitive with a high leverage.
Oh, unfortunately, I don't have one at the top of my head right now, because usually when I see such companies, I tend to put them into my too hot pile and just kind of forget about them.
Okay. And as usual, Surging, we like to end on an interesting piece of corporate or market news. And today we want to look at Donald Trump, and in particular his Trump Media and Technology Group. Shares of the company fell as much as 12% yesterday. And as we know, investors have soured on the company after it disclosed millions of US dollars in losses earlier this month and said it would struggle to meet its financial liabilities. Now, what will this mean for Donald Trump, and how far can he cash up from this company then?
The Trump Media and Technology Group is interesting. You know, if you look at its market capitalization of about $5 billion, and you compare that with the company's last reported financials of trailing revenue of, I believe, $4.6 million, and a net loss of about $40 million. So this looks to me, at least, like there's a massive disconnect happening between the company's fundamentals and stock price.
Yeah.
So in the short run, I think anything can happen to a company's stock price, but in the long run, I believe that the stock market acts as a weighing machine, and what it weighs will be a company's fundamentals. So I think it will be pretty difficult for Trump to be extracting significant value from the company, because he owns around 57% of the company's shares right now, I believe. It is difficult for him to do so for two related reasons. So first, as I mentioned, there's this huge disconnect between the company's fundamentals and stock price that I see. So I think between the two scenarios of the company being severely overvalued or severely undervalued, I think it's way more likely that the company is currently being severely overvalued right now. And the second reason is that if Trump wants to sell a large block of shares now to convert some of that potentially inflated equity value into liquid cash, I believe that's a risk that the company's stock price will fall in response to a large block of shares from an insider being put up for sale.
Right. So either way, it doesn't seem to be working out for him as well. Thanks a lot, Surging. That was Chong Surging, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Thank you for having me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.